Blog Talk Radio.
To see it, friends, you're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you'll find us online at speculist.com. That's speculist.com. Or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we talk about a convergence of emerging possibilities and emerging technologies, which is at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are hard to predict, sometimes even hard to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead and that will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, who dat, Stephen Gordon.
Hey, Phil, how are you doing?
I'm super fantastic. How are things down in Louisiana? Anything interesting happening in the past few days?
Man, you would not believe how happy, especially the entire state is with this breaking of a 43-year dry spell for the New Orleans Saints. It's like Mardi Gras, the Jazz Fest, just everything cool about New Orleans all rolled into one, and that's what's happening here with this win. It's really been a shot in the arm to a city that's kind of needed one. So
that's had some hard times, to say the very least. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, well, what a game too, huh? I mean, I have to say that.
For once, the game actually was better than the commercials. So.
And that's saying something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking there were a couple of commercials that were pretty lame, but I was thinking the census commercial. What the heck was that? I don't get what they were trying to do with that. But the game itself was absolutely astounding. It was hard fought by both teams, and the score would lead you to believe that the Saints ran away with it. But truly, on the field, it was literally anyone's ball game all the way up until the fourth quarter. Towards the end,
it was anybody's ball game until about the 2-minute warning. Actually, I mean, it was tight right until then. And even when Manning threw that big interception prior to that, all the announcers were talking about was, okay, he's going to make this touchdown. Now it's just a question of whether he can make the onside kick and make the next touchdown and get to overtime. And the presumption was he would, right? That's kind of where
we were just gonna they were just gonna play standard football here, and nothing weird was gonna happen, and that's probably the way it was gonna go. But
yeah, I mean that's Peyton Manning, right? Absolutely. But was not meant to be. Was not his night. Was not his day. Was not his year. And New Orleans Saints, world champions. So yeah, it was a really exciting game, and even before they clinched it, I was texting my brother. He and I watch sporting events together by texting each other comments as we go. And he was kind of halfway pulling for Indianapolis, but didn't really care. But I was one of these. Well, my heart says New Orleans, but my head says it's going to be the Colts. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, everybody just kind of assumed that it'd be the Colts by a couple of touchdowns.
Yeah, exactly.
And frankly, I kind of felt the same way. Pulling, of course, for the home team, but I kind of figured it was they were the underdogs, and try not to be too disappointed when they got beat. But it didn't work out that way. So
yeah, well, when it's gone from like a 3-point game to a 4-point game to a 1-point game back to a 5-point game, you're just watching this kind of ping pong thing going on. I texted my brother and I said, "Wow, Manning's going to really have to get to work if they're going to have this big blowout that everybody's been talking about, right?"
That's right.
Doesn't look like that's in the cards. And then
he's just trying to keep it interesting.
Yeah, I think it got too interesting for him there in the end, for sure. Okay, well, yeah, big congrats to New Orleans and to the whole state of Louisiana. and you know.
Well, you see that win by the New Orleans Saints is helping me deal with my losses in Scrabble. So you know that's kind of the way it goes.
Well, tell us about your losses in Scrabble. I'm sure the listening audience is fascinated by that subject. Having some trouble in Scrabble, are you?
Oh, absolutely. Phil, it turns out, is like a very good Scrabble player. And I am a recreational Scrabble player. Too bad you can't earn a living at it, Phil.
I'd love to get on the pro circuit, but actually, I think what you've encountered. We've only played a game and a half. I think what you've encountered.
The second game is beyond. I'm beyond help on the second game. I'm afraid. So I'm trailing so far. But yeah.
Well, I can't comment. It's looking a little bleak, I have to say, but I shouldn't comment, because it would sound like trash talk or something. And what I was going to say was, I think what I have done is I've had a really unusually good set of draws of letters. That's all. I think that just like in a poker game, sometimes you're playing a really skilled game, and sometimes people just catch cards, right? I think I've been catching tiles. I really don't.
You're making me feel better, but anyway, we'll see when we play a couple more games.
We'll play a few more rounds. I named our current round Rocky 2 with the thought that you were going to come back and beat me. So you know, I was giving myself the Apollo Creed role.
It appears Rocky just wants to go at the distance a second time. So that's apparently what's happening with this game. But anyway, we do actually have a show tonight, though.
Yes, in addition to football and Scrabble, we want to get into our review of the Speculist Essentials. Now, we did this topic originally, I'm going to say, about a year and a half ago. I think it was June of 2008. And I thought it might be fun to revisit these lists that we said we would check back in on them from time to time and just see if we give the same answers when asked the same questions. And the idea here is to identify these key influencers, these kind of points of departure in our lives that have given us a speculist or fast-forward radio or futurist-friendly view of the universe. So we've got six categories of essentials, and the categories are movie or TV show, fiction book, nonfiction book, website, event, and person. And so I know you and I each have lists that we've come up with to discuss for this year, and maybe before we do anything else, we should talk. And I've also got some that I put this up on Facebook, and a few people have contributed their thoughts on what their essentials are. But maybe before we get into the new ones, we should review what we came up with last time. Would that be?
I would have a little trouble remembering that, Phil. Do you happen to have the list there in front of you?
I do actually happen to have it in front of me, right?
Good.
So last time out. Here were my essentials, okay? For the movie or TV show, I said Field of Dreams. And my rationale for that is I see in that movie an image of a post-singularity world. The heaven that's presented in Field of Dreams, certainly not an orthodox heaven as described in any religion. It kind of sits in its own universe, and it's described by one of the players as it's the place where dreams come true. And that's really what I see approaching rapidly is the emergence of technologies that essentially make dreams come true, make whatever we can imagine be accessible as reality. And when we get into our candidates and discussion for other possible essentials later on, I've got some other thoughts on movies that touch on that same thing. But that was the thinking behind that one. My fiction book was Permutation City by Greg Egan, just a great exploration of alternate realities kind of cascading in on each other. My nonfiction book, It's Getting Better All the Time, 100 Greatest Trends of the Last 100 Years by Stephen Moore. In a totally non-self-congratulatory way, my website was The Speculist, and the event that I chose was the Foresight Nanotech Institute. And person that I named was Actually, it says here John Smart, but didn't I say the person was you, I believe, Stephen? I think that...
I think it was, and I remember being very flattered by that, yeah.
Yeah,
it was.
Somehow the notes got transcribed incorrectly, although John, you know, is right up there. He's right up there with you, okay? Ray Kurzweil,
yeah.
John Smart, I don't want you guys to take anything personally. You guys are right up there with Stephen Gordon. That's my point.
They've actually both been on the show since we made that list, so they probably would have outranked me had they been on the show at that time. So, anyway.
Well, we'll see how you do. We'll see how you do tonight. So,
okay.
And how I do. But you're already up there, right? You know, you don't have to keep winning every year, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I've got my coffee mug. I'm good.
That's it exactly. Now, Stephen, your list, your movie or TV show, your first choice was Gattaca, although you mentioned Blade Runner as a big influence as well. The novel that you picked was Fire Upon the Deep by Werner Vinge. Nonfiction book was The Singularity is Near by Ray Kurzweil. And website, your choice was Instapundit, which I think is a great choice, although you were quick to point out that it's not just a futurist site. It is kind of a political site, but it's a political site that comes from a singularity-aware geek. And I always think that I always like to describe it as I think Glenn is really doing a tech geek site, and he puts in enough politics to kind of keep the thing going, right? But
that's right.
But his heart really actually, based on some of the posts, I think his heart really lies with cookware, right? I mean,
and cameras.
Yeah, and cameras. He gets way and audio equipment, but that swings you back around to the geek stuff. The event that Stephen listed was the Apollo 11 moonshot, the moon landing, and the person was Aubrey de Grey, who had already been a guest on Fast Forward Radio at that point, and who has been one a repeat visitor subsequent to that on The World Transformed. So, hey, while we're doing it, although he's not with us this evening, we'll get into Sally's list here in a minute. But Michael Darling, our chat host emeritus of the program, came up with Blade Runner as his movie or TV show. His book was The Adventures of Tom Sawyer. Okay, everybody hold on. I'm going to get him on the phone. He's going to have to explain that, right? His nonfiction book was The Wealth of Nations by Adam Smith. Very interesting. And let's see, the website, he listed Yudkowsky.net and Acceleration Watch.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those are good sites.
Yeah, both excellent choices. The event was a certain ahem life, love life experience. I take it back. He also listed Apollo 11 as a space program. Person was, I'm in a three-way tie with Isaac Asimov and Gene Roddenberry. So that's pretty good company. I'll take
you're that. You're an August company there.
Yeah, not bad. And... That's Michael's list. Okay, so that's where we were about a year and a half ago. Tonight we will update our lists, and why don't we start out just by talking through what possible choices one might list for a movie or TV show?
Well, last time my choice was Gattaca, and this time, just to update it, to throw out something a little bit different, I'm gonna say the movie WALL-E, the Pixar movie WALL-E. Now, in some ways, it's very similar in theme to Gattaca, and I think the reason it had such a profound effect on not just me but also my kids and my family, it was kind of neat to see them get the message from WALL-E, the same message really I'd gotten from Gattaca. And that you have this in both movies, you have a dystopic future, and where things are not the way you would hope that they would go, but things are kind of gone wrong as we've gained technology. And so, but through in both movies, you have the human optimism and the human heart is on display and really saves the day in both movies, and so I found WALL-E to be a good update of some of the same things that you see in the movie Gattaca.
That is a really interesting comparison. I would not think to connect those two movies. When I look at and here's why. They are both dystopic, but the dystopias are very different, right?
Very, very different, yes.
Yeah, the world of WALL-E is one where pollution has led to, I guess, essentially depopulation of the planet, and everyone has left. In Gattaca, it seems like the world's okay, right? Or am I remembering that wrong?
Well, the world's okay. It's that the problem is that basically the human race is divided into those who are engineered and those who are what they call faith-born, are you know, people that are born with that have not been engineered, and so basically you have this, you know, this permanent underclass of normal people that have to compete with these, you know, super smart, super beautiful, super everything, post-humans, basically, who are really, you know, the royalty of this world, and so you have this one normal human that has this dream, and it's his story, and so I thought it was beautiful, well done, so.
Absolutely, yeah, it's a very kind of hard won optimistic view, I would put
right.
it, in Gattaca, right. And in a more lighthearted way, you see the same thing in WALL-E, right? It's a
right.
It's an optimistic view, but you have to go through a lot of pain to get to the optimism. And it's interesting that for a good deal of the movie, the person carrying the torch for the human spirit. Humans do pick up the torch eventually, but the person carrying the torch is a robot.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. Motivated solely by love. I mean, that's, you know, he's completely without guile. You know, you have this cute little robot that just, I mean, he's in love with another robot, and that's his sole motivation. And
yeah.
It's just beautiful. I thought it was well done.
It's a terrific movie. It's a terrific movie. I think a lot of kids. And adults even, but a lot of kids growing up today will one day list that as one of their essentials for their view of what's happening in the world 30, 40, 50 years from now, I think. I think it'll be it was kind of an instant classic, really, wasn't it?
I believe so. Certainly my kids will list it as one of their favorites.
Now, I've come up with a few possible titles here. I started thinking a lot about movies and TV shows that I watched as a kid, and one show that came to mind was a cartoon. Did you ever see Johnny Quest?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was a very influential show on me. I have to say that this basically group of adventurers going around, and you know the protagonist is a kid, right? And he's got his friend Haji is a kid, and they've got a dog, and there's adults around too. But you know the kids kind of drive the action, and they had very grown-up type adventures, and you know they fought monsters that were kind of scary, and you know found lost cities, and it's hard to draw a line between that and you know say. To having an interest in the law of accelerating returns, but it stirred the imagination, particularly around both wanting to learn more about the world from a just kind of a science and technology standpoint, and also just from a wanting to go out and do fun stuff, you know, do cool stuff. I think it shaped my imagination in a lot of ways. It was a big influence on me as a kid. I know they brought it back a few years ago. I don't know if it was as good as the original, though.
I don't think so. My kids watched a few of the new ones, and they compared it negatively with the old show. So,
wow.
Yeah, I think,
okay.
Yeah.
So that's got to say something, right? If the one from the 60s holds up with modern-day kids, then that's pretty cool. Another show... do you remember a TV show on NBC? I think it ran for about a third of a season. It was called The Fantastic Journey.
Now, it seemed like there was an old Fantastic Journey where, you know, they shrunk down and went through the veins of, you know.
Ah, that's the Fantastic Voyage.
Fantastic Voyage. Okay, no. Then I don't know what the Fantastic Journey is about then.
The Fantastic Journey, the super Fantastic Journey, if you will. Basically, it was, how to describe it? It was people who had kind of fallen through some kind of doorway into a parallel universe, and they were in this, like, leftover universe world where if you just walked far enough, you'd end up in yet another parallel universe. So they're trying to find their way back to the real world, and it's just every week they're in some other mess because they've walked into some other parallel universe. It was not a good show by any critical measure, and like I say, it lasted about a third of a season. My local NBC affiliate in Kentucky, where I was living at the time, didn't even give it, I think they ran like four episodes, but man, those four episodes were just like locked in my brain, because that concept of just walking out of one reality into a completely different reality got a hold of me and stuck with me. And I realized that, you know, I was gnawing on that idea for many years, and saw its fruition when I first encountered the simulation hypothesis.
Yeah.
You know, that's the idea, right? Or when I first saw The Matrix, right? That idea started. It's like, that's what's going on there, right? These people don't know it, but their whole universe is some kind of made-up place. That's an idea that will... That will stick with you. I also would list a movie called, much more recently, called What Dreams May Come, which starred Robin Williams and Cuba Gooding. Have you seen that?
Yes, I have. You talk about a visually stunning movie. That is really, really incredible. I saw that movie and I said, you know, we have reached a point now where it can, if you can imagine it, you can put it on film.
You can put it on film, yeah. And to me, that's a stepping off point for eventually, if you can imagine it, you can experience it. And that's where I think we're headed. It's interesting to me that that one comes to mind, because also Field of Dreams, what they had in common is this very unorthodox view of the afterlife, which I see as quite similar to people kind of poking around the edges of notions of the singularity. They don't call it that, and it's cosmologically not presented as that. But when I think about the singularity, I think about those same kinds of possibilities being manifested, which is not to say that I think the singularity is the afterlife. I don't. I just think that we have, in recent unorthodox visions of the afterlife, we have probably come upon a few close intimations of, well, not even close, a few vague hints of what post-singularity existence might be like. It's a very evocative movie. And there's this one sequence where, like the whole world's an oil painting, right?
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, you know, wet and dripping, and it's just, that's an amazing movie. Anyway, I'll move quickly along, because I realize that we're almost halfway through the show and we're only on the first item. Number one choice, I go back to my childhood. My parents took me to see it in a drive-in movie theater in 1969, 2001, The Space Odyssey.
That movie can still blow you away. It's odd in so many great ways. If you haven't seen that movie, stop everything, go see it. That thing, 2001, The Space Odyssey, is still great after all this time. So.
Yeah, well, and I think one of the things that we understand better about the aliens in that movie now is that these are clearly post-singularity beings, right? This is
right.
They have
a little trouble communicating to us, and that's what the weirdness is all about. They're just so out there that, I mean, you know, the best they can do is, you know, feel pretty weird, and so that's what that's all about. So
the best they can do is kind of bend down to our level, but they don't do it very well because they're just so far ahead of us. And yeah, you're right. That creates the weirdness of the movie, which, you know, gets rectified to a certain extent in the movie, the sequel, which I think is underappreciated because it was made by a much less well-regarded filmmaker. But the movie 2010, hey, which is this year. How about that? the Year We Make Contact, not nearly as well regarded a movie, but kind of brings the aliens in a little bit. You know, they become a little bit more understandable, and maybe that wrecks it for some people.
Yeah, you do lose some of the weirdness, and so I think that's part of what 2001 had going for it. So I can understand why the critics would not like it as well. But yeah. Okay, I guess we need to move on quickly then to fiction books, huh?
Well, actually, I've got a few other answers here, just real fast, because.
Okay.
Yeah. Wayne Radinsky, our pal from the Boulder Future Salon, has responded on Facebook, and he's given his answers. And let's just see real fast. His movie or TV show, oh, can't think of any. Sally Morim, our chat host, responded with a TV show, Star Trek, any of several series, especially episodes in which the crew had to deal with extremely advanced aliens, such as the post-singularity type thing. And then we had... one other from Alex Lightman, and I thought his was quite interesting. Any guesses as to what Alex Lightman came up with for his choice of a movie?
I have no idea. What do you fill out?
You really don't. His choice was Dr. Zhivago.
Okay, all right. And I would like to know how that fits.
I would very much like to know why he came up with that, and I. In my Facebook note, eliminated people from explaining things because I said, don't explain, just say what it is. We'll have to have Alex on the show one of these days, and let's just bookmark that when we do, we need to remember to ask him how Dr. Zhivago led him to be a futurist, because that's an interesting, that's even more out there than you're connecting WALL-E and Gattaca, okay? By a couple orders of magnitude, actually. That's...
You know what's great though, when we have him on the show and we ask him, he'll explain it and it'll make perfect sense. And so.
It might.
Okay.
It might at that. Okay, so yeah, let's move on. Next, we'll talk about books. What are we on? Novels, is that right? Fiction.
Yeah, fiction books. Yeah. Now,
so what do you got?
Last time I had a Werner Vinge novel. By the name of Fire Upon the Deep. This time I have another Werner Vinge novel, Rainbow's End. I happen to like that author quite a bit, but Rainbow's End, very, very good near-singularity novel. This is a world that's beginning to go crazy because it's circling the singularity drain, if you will. It's a... this particular guy basically had been out of commission, just about to die for about 10 or 15 years because he was old, and so he just was about half out of it. And then of course, as they came close to the singularity, they were able to fix him basically, and so all of a sudden he's back in the world again, but is lost as a goose because he doesn't know how to really function in this new weird world. And one of the things that's going on in the novel is things like destruction of paper libraries, so that they can use the digital copies, the digital copies can be checked out and things like that. So lots of interesting ideas that we're already beginning to have to work through with digital copyright and other things like that. So, it's a great book. I recommend it.
Okay, well that's an excellent choice. I listed several books again from my childhood. Madeleine L'Engle's A Wrinkle in Time, a book called The Forgotten Door by Alexander Key, I think, is that right? And Citizen of the Galaxy by Robert A. Heinlein. Those are all tied for my childhood favorite novels, okay? All of them, again, kind of in the Johnny Quest vein, just sort of opening up a completely different view of the universe for you the first time you read those books. Forgotten Door was really cool. That is probably the least well-known of the three, but that's about a kid who is just out playing one day and actually falls through a portal to another planet, and, of course, the other planet he ends up on is Earth. And he's from this, like, much, much more highly evolved planet where, everything is completely different. And he runs into the locals on Earth, and you know, not to spoil the whole story, but it's a really cool image of a kind of new and improved, world transformed kind of humanity. But my book, fiction book choice for this time around is I went with Greg Bear rather than Greg Egan this time, and it's the novel Blood Music. Although I think I might have to go with the short story version, even over the novel, just because it's so compact. You basically, in a few pages, Greg Bear takes us from a guy, you know, having a few odd symptoms to the world being utterly transformed by a kind of a biological nanotechnology and intelligence that, you know, just completely takes the world apart and begins to shape it in a completely new way. If you've not read it, check it out. That's a terrific book.
Absolutely, absolutely. The short story blew me away when I read it. I'd like to throw out an honorable mention, basically, to the entire Robot series of Isaac Asimov. Those books, as a kid, those books really, really were something to me.
Well, I'll see you, the robots and Rage of the Foundation trilogy. Actually, those books were pretty awesome too. Yeah, just the whole galactic civilization. Whereas with the robots, you've got the whole artificial intelligence scenario kind of laid out. Yeah. So, okay. Sally also chose Blood Music.
Oh,
Wayne
cool.
Radensky says, I don't read fiction. So we will not psychoanalyze that. I think PJ would have thoughts on people who don't read fiction. But let's see. Alex Lightman chose Great Sky River by Gregory Benford and Earth by David Brent. So it's a two-way tie for those books. And what do we see? Anything interesting in the chat room on those?
For some reason, I'm having a little bit of trouble bringing up the chat room. I think maybe we tried to sign in as the same person filled this.
Oh, week. you can get in now. I've signed in as myself. Sorry.
Okay. Well, I'll try again.
I was logged in as you earlier because I was setting up the show. But
okay.
Didn't mean to cause you problems. But I've seen more votes for Blood Music and more support for A Wrinkle in Time. I think we're all, we're all looking at the same stuff here. More votes for Rainbow's End. Yep, don't see anything different. So we'll move on to our next topic, which is.
I want to throw out just
it's
a short story called "They're Made of Meat."
They're made out of meat.
I encourage everyone to Google that. There's like a video version of that short story.
Yeah, we've had it posted on the site before. I'll dig that.
Oh yeah, just brilliant. I love that. I love that that short story and the video version of it. It's definitely worth checking out. We'll try to find it for the show notes.
Yeah, that is a terrific story. That's an eye opener too. That one will change your perspective of the universe quite a bit. Okay, good stuff. All right, nonfiction book. Last time out, I had chosen. It's getting better all the time. This time I'm voting for a book called Gödel Escher Bach, An Eternal Golden Braid. That's a kind of a mathematical treatise on, you know what, I have no category to put that book in. It's sort of about artificial intelligence. It's sort of about math. It's kind of a philosophy book. But I read it probably 25 years ago, and it definitely got me to start thinking about some of the issues that we deal with on this program. Just the whole idea of things being modeled in one level of reality versus another, ideas about paradox, ideas about representing information in symbolic ways. It's a cool book, hard book, very challenging book to get all the way through, but definitely worth reading.
Excellent. I have stuck with the same book that I had last time.
Okay.
And that's The Singularity Is Near. It's Ray Kurzweil's, so far, masterpiece. I don't know that he'll write another one quite as in-depth and as thorough as The Singularity Is Near. It covers in a masterful way. It covers some very, very deep ideas. he talks about the six epochs, basically moving from intelligence as embodied in chemistry, and then in biology, and then in language, and then in machines. He talks about these epochs and how we're moving through them, and then he talks about technological evolution and a law of accelerating returns, basically showing how as technology maxes out, it's overtaken by another form of technology, and so you have basically a bunch of S curves linked together. As one technology plays out, we get a new technology that takes over and continues the forward progress. So just some really neat ideas in that book, and still it's profound today as it was when it was published about 5 years ago now.
It's been 5 years, man.
Yeah.
Talk about accelerating change, huh?
Yeah.
Things are going by fast.
Things fly by now.
I still think of that as his new book. As much as I loved it and as impressed as I was by that book, I actually think that I was more blown away by The Age of Spiritual Machines, the book that came before that, only because that was the first time I had read some of those ideas, right? By the time you encounter them in The Singularity Is Near, they're better developed, better thought out. It's a more complete picture. But you don't get that initial shock. It's like going over the top of the roller coaster, right? Just that moment of what?
Whoa!
Yeah. So I would, if I were going to pick a Kurzweil book, I think I would go with The Age of Spiritual Machines. But both absolutely seminal, important books. And I note that on Facebook, Sally has seconded your vote for The Singularity Is Near. Now. Wayne Radinsky, I thought, had an interesting selection here. He came up with Evolution, The Triumph of an Idea by Carl Zimmer. And I've been forgetting to mention Bell Black, who is a futurist that was tagged by Wayne. Her movie or TV show was Being John Malkovich. Her fiction book, Brave New World, and her nonfiction book was Super Crunchers by Ian Ayers. That is an excellent, excellent book. I actually had the pleasure of seeing Ian Ayers speak at a conference related to my day job 2 or 3 years ago, and bought a copy of that book. Just talks about the way that statistical analysis is kind of reshaping our world, and that people who understand analytics and understand statistics have a real kind of leg up in the business world today and in understanding how the world works. It's a very, very cool book. Finally, Alex Lightman, he suggested The Meaning of the 21st Century by James Martin. I've not heard of that, but these are what's great about this is you put together a reading list based on suggestions from others.
Excellent.
Okay. Well, the next category – I'm sorry. Before I go on –
I just said that was all good stuff. I think those are all good suggestions. I'm going to – have to get a hold of and reread a couple of those things.
Yeah, good stuff. I was just going to say, before we move on to the next one, any other votes in the chat room? Let's see. Prime Intellect. Interesting singularity piece. Okay, so we'll note Prime Intellect and more votes for Godel Escherbach. And in the chat room, they're already onto the website. They're jumping ahead. Hey, chat room people, could you please stay with us? Okay.
Well, we're being pushed ahead by our.
We're a little behind the schedule, but we're working through a list in sequence here, chat room people. Please. Okay.
We got some folks that are looking forward to Eliezer Yudowsky's book that he's got coming out shortly. So I'm sure that's going to be awesome.
That's going to be great. We'll have to have Ellie back on the show to talk about that. That'll be good fun. I didn't realize he was writing a book, so that's exciting.
That's it. Yeah.
Okay, website. What do you got, Stephen?
Okay. All right. So website, I am sticking with my choice from last time, which is Instapundit. Now, I got to throw out, serious honorable mention to our own website, The Speculus, because you know, being involved in a website, in the, you know, in the writing for a website and producing content for a website, you get so much out of that. I want, you know, those, you know, our listeners who are, I'm sure we have bloggers within our audience, and I know we do, but those of you who have not ever done it, participated in writing for a blog or producing content in some way, if you'll do it, you will find that you learn more from doing that kind of thing than reading other people's stuff. So, you know, I have to say the speculative, but I'm going to go back and say, as far as one that I have not personally written for, it'd have to be Instapundit, primarily because Glenn is just such a fun guy to read. His interests are so encyclopedic. He's, for one thing, he's this brilliant guy. He's obviously a geek. He's singularity aware, and yet he talks about everything in the world. And, you know, politics, cameras. He obviously loves audio equipment. What are his other major interests? I mean, he's just into everything, and he writes for. I think it's Popular Mechanics, and so he's always writing cool stuff for that. And so, anyway, I highly recommend Glenn Reynolds' Instapundit.
Well, the things he can do with a single syllable, right? Just "heh" can mean so much from Glenn. Or like, yeah. I love a link like I saw today. I can't remember it exactly, but it was to the effect of the horror of sexual anorexia. I mean, when you just see those two words, you know, it's like it's just this very dry sense of humor that really works for me in a big way. I like Glenn a lot. I'm going to vote for Yahoo.com just because I think it kind of transformed the way I use the internet. And I'm not going to vote for the Speculist 2 years running, although for all the reasons you stated, it's bigger than any of the others. I want to give honorable mention to a couple of sites, though. One would be clearly Michael Anisimov's blog. I read Eliezer Yudkowsky. Who am I forgetting here? These are our top folks.
Next Big Future, Brian Wong.
Brian Wong, thank you, yeah. Those three are like huge for me. Also, Overcoming Bias, we had Robin Hanson on not too long ago. Those are all can truly shape your perspective and provide just terrific insights in the world. Also, okay, since I'm throwing out runners up, Dig Science is a great site. Just see what the news stories are in science. It's amazing what's being discovered and what's being talked about just on a daily basis. It's an amazing world we live in. Okay, votes from others. Sally voted for The Speculist, of course, she says. Thank you, Sally. Wayne voted for Google, so a similar, I think, idea to my vote for Yahoo, only a generation later. Belle Black said Wolfram Alpha. I can see where that would have been huge. An interesting answer from Alex. He said Stratfor.com, so that makes me want to go check that one out and see what that's about. Anything going on in the chat room on this one?
Well, let's see. This Week in Nanotechnology.blogspot.com.
Oh, okay. Great title.
Ken, I wonder if that's your blog. So I'll take a look here real quick.
Definitely one to check out. We see nanularity.com, Kurzweil AI.net. That's a great that's a great RSS feed. I get that one in my email. That's great if you run a blog like The Speculist. You get a lot of good stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, here's another story.
And you grab it, and then all you have to do is come up with something interesting to say about this cool thing that's happening. So
yeah, you just say "heh," right, and then you got a
blog. Or indeed.
Indeed, yeah, you got a blog post. Exactly.
That's right.
Okay, so our next
Humanity Plus.
Of course.
Yes.
And everyone else we forgot that we should have mentioned, because there are a number of really influential sites, and it's unfair probably to settle on anyone. Well, actually, we're doing okay on time now. You see how we recover? We get in trouble, and then we're
right through. Yeah, exactly.
So our next category is a person. And this is a fun one. As I mentioned last time out, I went with my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon, although the show notes record that as John Smart, because I think what I had said was that you guys are kind of tied for first place, and you've been influential in different ways, put it that way. Stephen writes incredibly cool stuff, and just by being my partner in running Fast Forward Radio and the blog, you've really kept me involved in all this and been kind of a sounding board for all these ideas. So you really have truly been a major influence on my view of the future and my involvement in the futures community. However, this year I went with John Smart just because I had chosen you the previous year. John was on our World Transformed series. We've talked about his ideas frequently at The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, so it was great having him on for kind of a jumbo size interview. I think that one ran two whole segments on The World Transformed, did it not?
It did, and I got to tell you, you know, if you have not heard that, go back and listen to it, and behold, Phil and I both just basically shutting up and letting him talk, because the man is brilliant, and you know, it was a little bit difficult to keep up. I just got to throw that out.
It is a little hard to keep up, yes.
You know, he is making mental leaps that, you know, basically. You know, it's just amazing to watch. But and you go back and you listen enough times, you begin to get it. You know, he's just that far beyond in his thinking. So, yeah, just a brilliant guy. And I'm not at all hurt that I've been, dethroned by John Smart. So, excellent.
And you're still right up there. You, Ray, and John. Okay, I'm saying you're the big three. You just like Gene Roddenberry, Isaac Asimov, and I are kind of, you know, we're one of those.
Well, I'm throwing out Aubrey de Grey again.
Okay.
Last time we did this, I put down the person that was most influential in my thinking as Aubrey de Grey, and yet again, it's still Aubrey de Grey. Now, Ray Kurzweil and you, Phil, are right up in there. But the reason is Aubrey's just absolute. His reductionist theory in how to take care of a problem. Basically, you break it down into the smallest parts and you work those problems bit by bit. Just to, you know, that's the engineer in Aubrey de Grey. Basically, you know, it's not for science for science's sake. It's science for a specific purpose. Same way they, basically said, okay, how do we get to the moon? We're going to the moon now. How do we do it? You know, basically that idea that occupied our nation in the 60s, Aubrey de Grey is pushing forward with the idea that how do we conquer aging as a disease so that we can live indefinitely. He has been the person that's most influential to me in my thinking as a futurist.
And another fascinating person to talk with. We've had the honor of having him on the program twice. He's a guy you could just talk to all night, and his understanding of and enthusiasm for life extension is just absolutely infectious. It's great talking to him, and I can certainly see why Aubrey would be at the head of your list. He's a terrific choice. I'm seeing on the chat room some interesting votes. Ken Kesey, Michi Okaku, W.G. Flinton has voted for her father-in-law. So we need more on that. What's that all about? Sally voted for Eric Drexler. And let's see.
His book, Engines of Creation, I read for the first time, basically when we did our shows on Engines of Creation. Was that late last year? And absolutely blown away by his grasp of these issues back in the 80s. You know, I wish that I had come across that book as basically a kid when it was published, but I read it for the first time here just last year.
That has been a tremendous influence on me as well, and I think if you were to pick one individual who has shaped our view of the future, not as individuals, but this whole community, you know, it's a very short list, and Drexler is right there. You know, it's got to be him or Kurzweil or one or two others. I mean, I know Sally has made the case in the past that it all really sort of starts with Engines of Creation, and I think there's a lot to, be said for that argument. I think in some ways he is truly the founder of the view of the future that a lot of us have today. He's really the guy who started all of that. I note that we've gone out of order. We should have done event before person, but we're on person, so right. We haven't done event, have we?
No, we've not. And so, okay. We'll circle back and get that in just a second.
We'll come back to it. Wayne Rudisky came up with Bill Gates. I think that's also hard to argue with. And a really interesting answer from Belle Black. She said Joseph Campbell. Campbell obviously being a not a futurist, but a scholar and academic who talked about the meaning of mythology in our lives. And
wrote
one of the reasons,
excellent book called Hero with a Thousand Faces or something
like Hero with a Thousand Faces, and a really influential TV show on PBS, Transformations of Myth Through Time. Those two things kind of go together. The Transformations book version is easier because it's from a TV show and it's got a lot of pictures, you know. Hero with a Thousand Faces can be fairly heavy sledding, but it's a terrific book. And the notion of the hero's journey, you know what, there is an interesting parallel that needs to be explored, Stephen, between the hero's journey and the law of accelerating returns. Somebody's got to figure out how those two things go together. There's, I think there might be something there. And it just reminds me when I see that Belle voted for that. It's a great choice, Belle. One of the books that I had listed as a fiction book and I didn't get to from my childhood, I'm looking at it right now. I got it when I was 8 years old. It's The Golden Treasury of Myths and Legends. A kid's book about mythology really just kind of opened up my imagination and gave me a different view of the world. I think that fantasy, mythology, legends, they can all do that. They can all have that impact. Alex Lightman voted for Ray Kurzweil. That's I'd say a very solid choice for that question. Okay, so that takes us now. Or I'm sorry, was there anything else on any other? Did you have any other runners up on person?
No, I don't think so. That's everybody from the chat room, and certainly Ray Kurzweil is right up there in my thinking. I think Eric Drexler, and of course Richard Feynman. In his seminal speech, there's plenty of room at the bottom. If it wasn't started, if all of these ideas were not started, but with Engines of Creation, then we have to, and we wanted to look back a little further, perhaps to that speech might be where you would look. So, I might just throw that out as a runner-up.
Okay. All right. Well, that will then take us to events. I just want to say to W.G. Flitton, condolences on the loss of your father-in-law. He was a wonderful man, and I think that's great that you listed him as the person who had been the biggest influence on you. Now let's talk about events, Stephen. I think it's your turn to go first. What's your event?
Well, I'm going to have to say that the World Transform series that we did last year. Now, I know, you know, when we're saying events, we often mean, you know, some a seminar that we physically go to. But this 10-part series that we did for Fast Forward Radio, well, for one thing, I got to hand it to you, Phil. It was, there were times when I thought, Jesus, you know, Phil has just lost it. He is,
he's never going to pull this off.
More. Yeah, he's bitten off way more than we're going to be able to chew. This is just never coming together. And yet it did. I mean, I'm going to run through the list of people we got to talk to because of that series. John Smart, Ray Kurzweil, Paul Fernhout, Joseph Jackson, Bruce Katz, Michael Anisimov, Greg Campbell, Sonia Arison, Philippe Van Netterveld, Eliezer Yudkowsky, James Hughes, Ben Gertzel, Are You Serious, PJ Manning, Brian Wong, Jay Storrs Hall, Mike Treader, Christine Peterson, Aubrey DeGray, and Terry Grossman. I believe that's everybody. I went back and pulled those folks out of there. We got, I mean, it was a 10-hour series. It was a 10-show series. Actually, it was 11 shows total, but in 10 parts, where we talked to all these folks, and you know, just a fun series to do, and very eye opening. So yeah, I'd have to say that's been very influential on me.
Well, thank you. I thank yourself, because you obviously were a huge part of that too. I have to say that when you read that list off, if I didn't know that was a list of people who had appeared on a series on Fast Forward Radio, I would say, man, that'd be a great bunch of people to get on Fast Forward Radio. So, because that is like the who's who of this community. So it's great that we were able I don't know how to describe it. A real honor that we were able to talk to all those individuals. And yeah, we've got 16 and a half hours. I just did the math in my head of World Transformed, which is available on The Speculist and on Blog Talk Radio. And that also has a future over and above what we've talked about before. One of the speaking of biting off more than we can chew. One of the New Year's resolutions we made on our New Year's show, Stephen, if you remember, well, I'm saying we, I guess I made it, but I made it for both of us, so you know, you can thank me later, is that we're going to take it up a notch this year and do something even bigger. So we've got our work cut out for us. Good thing it's only early February. We really got we got a lot of work to do if we're going to top that show.
Well, we're going to have to invent some sort of machine so we can talk to historical figures if we're going to do something more. I mean, it's I don't know how you're not going to get any bigger names than these.
We're certainly not going to do any bigger names, that's for sure. But we're going to take it up a notch. You'll see. We'll take it.
Figure
up.
Out a way. Okay.
We will take it up a notch. All right. Well, my event, as listed last year, was the 2003 Foresight Senior Associate Gathering. And I cannot change that one. I've altered my other answers, but that weekend so utterly changed my life that I really do have to stick with that. That's where I met Christine Peterson. I met J. Storrs Hall. I met John Smart. Really got a firsthand look at so much of what we talk about at The Speculist and on this program that I'm gonna have to stick with. I'm going to have to stick with that answer. Now, I see in the chat room, Sally has voted for the founding of the Foresight Institute. I would agree that that is a historic event of epic proportions. Let's see who else we got here. Wayne, interestingly, says prefer not to answer. So we will just have to not know that. Belle Black's answer was the Internet. Interesting perspective there to view the Internet as an event. And finally, Alex Lightman gives us the H-Plus Summit for 2009, which I believe also PJ Manny has described as the best futurist event she ever attended.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we ran through that last part pretty quick, but I think we still have time to hear the music. What do we got?
Oh, okay, well, what we got tonight is Wake Tomorrow by Crystal Kovac.
Crystal Kovac playing Wake Tomorrow. Well, thanks for putting that together for us, Stephen, and for your list and for being a major influence on this program and on the overall futurist community. Thanks for everyone who participated. And if you haven't responded yet on Facebook, we're going to be collecting these all week. Next week, Martin Ford will be on the program to talk about the lights in the tunnel. 2 weeks from tonight, we'll be talking with Cory Doctorow. So until then, live to see it.
Your head in my lap and the tears run dry. We both know why. The strain of the moment is growing. We will be on break. dark will.